It's a pleasure to be here. I actually mentioned to my IMI colleagues during our team meeting this morning that I presented a segment of this presentation in Liberia just last week. I did a public lecture at the University of Liberia, and it was so hard trying to explain certain really complex concepts to a general audience. And so I feel like, okay, I'm a little bit at home now. So basically, this presentation is based on an excerpt from the first empirical chapter of my PhD on Liberian citizenship. And the thesis is focused, it's a transnational study of constructions and practices of Liberian citizenship across space and time, and its myriad implications for not only post-war development, but development across the long historical durée from the founding of the nation state until now, 21st century Liberia in its post-war moment. So again, it's an extract from that chapter, and the title of the presentation is Birthplace, Bloodline, and Beyond, How Liberian Citizenship is Constructed in Liberia and Abroad. And the birthplace, bloodline, and beyond, you'll come to realize, is really a foundation for a conceptual framework that I come up with based on empirical analysis and the data that I collected in five urban centers in Liberia. Okay, so the outline of the presentation, I'll talk about the rationale for the research, the entire thesis. I'll mention my central research question very briefly, although I won't belabor this. I'll talk about the methodology that I employed to collect the data, as well as a conceptual framework. And then I'll give you a bit of a historical analysis of what Liberian citizenship looked like in 1847 when the nation state was founded, and what happened, how it changed over time, and what it looks like now. And then talk about this foundation of the sort of new conceptual framework that I've come up with called the birthplace, bloodline, and beyond effect. And then talk a little bit about some concluding observations based on this particular analysis. So the rationale for the research. In 2007, I moved back to Liberia from the UK. And I was responsible for about 3 to 4 years, I was responsible for diaspora engagement and strategizing around how do you harness the potential of those living abroad, those living transnationally effectively, in the post-war recovery reconstruction process of Liberia. And one of the things I came up with in terms of my informal discussions with these Liberians living abroad was this issue of dual citizenship. Liberia doesn't recognize dual citizenship. And a lot of the transnational Liberians I spoke to talked about the fact that the state effectively was making certain commands and demands on their resources and their time, but wasn't willing to expand our nationality laws to enable them to maintain the citizenship of the country where they eventually settled, and then also to keep their Liberian citizenship. And so I was really interested in this whole idea of citizenship and dual citizenship and what does it mean in the post-war 21st century moment. So I decided to focus on the bill as an entry point to ask questions about what does it mean to be a Liberian citizen, and how has that changed. So I wanted to fill empirical gaps because there hasn't been a comprehensive study on Liberian citizenship, as it were. I also wanted to inform policy. The dual citizenship bill was introduced in 2008. It hasn't been passed yet, and I found that there were a number of gaps in the bill in terms of the way it's structured and constructed that I wanted to inform with sort of an empirical basis, with some sort of evidence that would feed into the revision of that bill. I also wanted to influence the public discourse. Most of the discussions around Liberian citizenship and dual citizenship at the moment is based on conjecture. It's hearsay, it's based on sentiments. And I wanted to provide not only the legislature in Liberia with an empirical evidence-based analysis of what dual citizenship means and citizenship means in Liberia, but also inform those in the public domain about what it actually means in practice and how the academic literature supports some of these claims and counterclaims. And then I wanted to begin a wider discussion about what Liberian citizenship actually means, not only in name, but also in practice, and how it's changed over time as well. Okay, so the central research question was, how have historical and contemporary factors contributed or influenced the introduction as well as the postponement and passage of Liberia's proposed dual citizenship bill? And the factors that I talk about throughout the thesis are conflict, migration, globalization, and post-war recovery. And I'll mention these in a bit more detail during the concluding observations at the end. And my major argument effectively is that the Dual citizenship is a 21st century manifestation of the number of contestations around citizenship across the long durée in Liberia's history and its present day discussions around dual citizenship. That the contestations that we see today are nothing new. There were contestations when the state was effectively established in 1847. And most of those contestations, the foundation of that was questions around citizenship. Who effectively belongs to the nation state? And what are the rights and privileges as well as the obligations and responsibilities of that citizenship? Okay, my methodology is multi-sided. I went to a number of urban centers across the globe. So I interviewed Liberians in Monrovia, the capital of the country. I interviewed Liberians in Accra, Ghana, in Freetown, Sierra Leone, in Washington, D.C., where I grew up, as well as in London. And the reason I did that is because Saskia Sassen wrote a really fascinating piece about the global city, and she argues that urban centers or cities are the spaces in which contestations around national belonging, contestations around identity, contestations around citizenship are most profound. And I recognize that that's a limitation of the study, but I did that purposely to sort of observe what happens in urban centers when people start having conversations around what it means to be a national of a particular nation state. The other reason I did the interviews in these particular urban centers, particularly Ghana and Sierra Leone, is most of the literature around diasporas focus on what Nick Van Heer calls the far diaspora, those diasporas who've gone further afield to the US, to the UK, and to quote unquote the global north. But there isn't a lot of literature in migration studies about what happens to those diasporas who go to the sub-region. So I wanted to observe and sort of contrast what happened to diasporas who went further afield to the US and the UK, as well as those who stayed within the sub-region. And how do their socioeconomic positions affect their conceptualizations of citizenship and their practices of citizenship from afar? So I thought it was important to do that sort of contrast between those two different, the global north and the quote-unquote global south. So most of the interviews I did were semi-structured and qualitative in nature. The respondents basically a wide array of Liberians across the spectrum. So I interviewed homeland Liberians, what I call homeland Liberians, and those individuals were effectively Liberians who remained in Liberia throughout the course of the armed conflict in the 1990s and the early 2000s, who may have left for very short stints, but effectively called Liberia their home, their permanent resident. That's the only place they've called home. I also interviewed permanent returnees, people who came back after the most recent armed conflict ended in 2003 and have lived there for 6 to about 10 years. And when I asked them, is this a permanent move? Are you here for the long haul? And they said, yes, I consider this a permanent move. I also interviewed circular returnees, those who have one foot in and one foot out. They may leave for certain periods, maybe 6 months on end, and then come back to Liberia. And they explicitly told me they're still testing the water. And they're not really sure if a particular move to Liberia at this particular moment is permanent. And I also interviewed Liberian policymakers, so those not only in the legislature, so the four sponsors of the dual citizenship bill of 2008, I interviewed all four of them to get a sense of what is it about this particular issue around dual citizenship that they were fascinated about enough to construct a bill around this issue. And then I also interviewed Liberian policymakers in the executive, so those policymakers who were responsible for driving post-war development implementation and transformation. And then last but certainly not least, I also interviewed Sierra Leonean parliamentarians who were responsible for introducing Sierra Leone's dual citizenship bill in the late 1990s and eventually got it passed in 2006. And the reason I interviewed Sierra Leonean policymakers is there's always a reference to other countries in the sub-region when Liberians talk about or making the case for dual citizenship. And they say that, well, you know, Ghana introduced and passed a dual citizenship bill in 2002. Why hasn't Liberia? Failing to realize that Liberia and Ghana have different historical trajectories. They don't have, Ghana doesn't have the experience of armed conflict, but Sierra Leone does. And Sierra Leone's history and Liberia's history, very, very similar. So I wanted to compare and contrast what happened in Sierra Leone that was different from Liberia, and how was that country able to go through the process of passage, and what could Liberia learn from that process as well? Okay, my conceptual framework basically has three strands, but very much aligned. Yuval Davis, who is at the University of East London, talks about the fact that citizenship is multi-layered and is effectively differentiated by gender, age, class, race, ethnicity. So basically all the social qualifiers that you can think about. And it was particularly interesting in the Liberia case because I'll talk about this a little bit later, but there are specific ethnic groups in Liberia that are not unanimously thought of as non-citizens or as foreigners, but a lot of people make comments about the fact that these people, even though they were born in Liberia or they have Liberian ancestry, are not citizens, they're strangers. And the ethnic group that came up quite often during my interviews was the Mandingos, who many of you know have large migratory patterns throughout the West African subregion. Many of them have come from other parts of the West African subregion. But they've settled in Liberia. Generations of Mandingos have lived in Liberia, but still, they have that sort of stigma, that political and social stigma, that they're not Liberian citizens by virtue of the fact that they have the sort of migratory patterns. Another group of people who've lived in Liberia for longer periods of time are the Lebanese. So Liberia has enshrined in its constitution that only those of quote-unquote Negro descent can be citizens. And Negro descent basically means if you're black. And I'll talk about how that came to be in terms of its historical foundation a little bit later. But people like the Lebanese or the Indians or the Syrians who've lived in Liberia for a long period of time, and even in the 21st century, the Chinese who are now migrating to Liberia to work on road construction cannot be citizens. And anyone of European descent cannot be a citizen of Liberia because of this Negro clause. It's still very much the foundation of the constitution of the country. Another conceptual strand is Norman Long, who talks about actor-oriented analysis. And what I like about his conceptual framework is he argues that individuals are actors, they're social actors. And although they are constrained by structures that stop them from effectively doing what they want to do, they also have agency. And quite often when development or policy prescriptions or policy and development policies are introduced, they often come from the top and they trickle down. And Norman Long argues that actors are not passive recipients of these development interventions. They're not passive recipients of policy interventions from the top down, that they engage with these policy interventions, that they critique these policy interventions, and even if they don't have the wherewithal or the agency to subvert the policy interventions because they don't necessarily favor them or help them in any way, shape, or form, they're not passively receiving them, that they contest it, they critique it, they talk about it. And they sort of engage at this space where he calls the interface, right? The interface is where not only contestations take place, but also accommodation takes place, where there's not only convergence, but there's also divergence. And he argues that people, again, respond to these policy interventions or these development interventions based on their social location, so their socioeconomic positioning in society, and then also their life world, their lived experience. And he borrows Bourdieu's notion of the habitus, right, the embodied histories of people. Another strand of my conceptual framework is by O'Connell Davidson, who argues that those who enjoy citizenship in the formal sense, basically legal status as a citizen, do not always enjoy equal access to its privileges and protections. And this will come up quite often during the interviews that I've had with those Liberians in those five locales, where even if you have the legal status of citizenship, by virtue of your socioeconomic status, again, your social location or your lived experience, your life world, you may not necessarily experience the institution of citizenship similarly. It might be very divergent based on those social locations and those lived experiences. So basically that's the foundation of my theoretical analysis, is that I talk about, again, actors having agency despite the structures in place, responding to development and policy prescriptions based on competing life worlds and social locations, and experiencing citizenship very differently, that it's incredibly differentiated based on these social qualifiers such as race, class, ethnicity, and gender. Okay, in terms of citizenship broadly defined, I'll just go through this very quickly. Obviously, citizenship means different things to different academic scholars, right? So for some people, it's the legal status, it's the legal identity, and it's only about legal status. Some people talk about the system of rights. Some people talk about obligations. So it's not just about the rights and privileges, but it's also about the obligations and the responsibilities. Others argue that citizenship is a political activity, a form of group identity and solidarity. And Eisen, who's like the father, the godfather of citizenship studies, argues, he gives a more sociological definition of citizenship, and he says citizenship is not only just the legal status, but it's also norms, practices, meanings, and identities that effectively change over time. Okay, there's a huge debate, and it hasn't been reconciled in the academic literature, about whether or not citizenship is bounded, and it's very much a state-centric notion of citizenship, or unbounded, and that's more of a transnational outlook on citizenship, where some argue that citizenship and identity are enshrined within a particular bounded nation state, and only one nation state, that you can't have multiple citizenships because effectively you can't act or practice citizenship in different locales at the same time. Others argue that citizenship is more transnational. It transcends national boundaries. So those are the two sort of polarized debates when it comes to discussions around dual citizenship or multi-layered citizenship. And this sort of polarized debate was replicated in the interviews that I did with Liberians, again, across these five locales, where you saw some people talking about dual citizenship as being the norm globally, and that Liberia should adopt it as a result of that. And others saying, no, we adopt a more bounded, state-centric notion of citizenship, where we believe that you are a citizen of only one state, and you can only be a citizen of one state. Okay, I'll talk a little bit about what Liberian citizenship looks like, and I use the single quotation marks basically to argue that, again, Liberian citizenship has been configured and reconfigured over space and time, and it's meant different things to different people at different periods of time in the country's history. So it's not, again, it's not static, and it's definitely changed. So in terms of what citizenship looked like when Liberia was founded in 1847, Liberia, as I was explaining to Ali before the presentation, is basically, when it was founded, it was an amalgam of different identities, people coming from different parts of the world, right? So when the state was founded, it was founded by quote-unquote repatriates from the United States, some of whom were manumitted slaves, others were freed men and women who came to Liberia through a program called nonprofit organization called the American Colonization Society, and these were abolitionists, white abolitionists in the United States, who, some of whom were magnanimous and wanted to create a space on the continent for black repatriates who were coming to Africa. Others argue that they weren't magnanimous, they just wanted to get rid of the race problem because a lot of the freedmen and women passing around in the United States were giving too many ideas to the slaves that they could be free effectively. So when Liberia was established, you had these repatriates, some of whom were manumitted slaves, others were freedmen and women. You also had indigenous Liberians who were already on this territory. You know the human history, right? You come, you colonize a particular territory, even though people already existed in that space, and you make it your own. But Liberia also had migrants from the Congo River Basin. So there were slaves who were on, or Africans from the Congo River Basin who were on their way to the New World, and they were on slave ships on their way through the Atlantic Ocean, and they were recaptured and sent back to Liberia. And then you also had migrants from the West Indies, from Jamaica, from Trinidad, who settled in Liberia. So you have this amalgam of different identities in one space, but it was peculiar in the way that citizenship was constructed, right? Citizenship was basically those, or formal citizenship, legal status citizenship, was defined as someone who's a Christian, male, so obviously outruled women having citizenship. You had to have land, and you also had to be of quote-unquote Negro descent. And the Negro descent clause came out as a result of, again, these repatriates coming from the United States, some of whom had been slaves, some of whom had been freedmen and women, basically wanting to carve out a space where they would control the means of production, where they would control the state effectively, and not be hampered by any sort of control from outside forces. And so they introduced this Negro clause because of their experience of racism and slavery in the United States. In 1904, when they settled, when the settlers came, they basically settled on the coast, on the Atlantic coast. But as they realized the British were encroaching upon Liberia's, what they had carved out to be Liberia, the French were encroaching upon this territory. And they had to expand not only vertically, but also horizontally. And I found that as Liberia expanded horizontally and vertically, the citizenship regime slightly changed. Still very much limited, but in 1904, President Barclay introduced something called the Barclay Plan. As a form of expanding the state, as it were. And there were territorial wars against this sort of expansion of the state by indigenous people who wanted to carve out a space in the hinterlands for themselves. So there were contestations over land ownership in this respect, or property ownership. And he imposed something called the hut tax, basically in the hinterlands. And people living in the hinterlands had to pay a small portion of tax in order to remain in those territories without having any state quote-unquote intervention. And they were supported by chiefs throughout this process. And what I found particularly interesting in this particular moment of history is that they were taxed, but they weren't considered citizens, right? So this whole notion of taxation without representation was very much part and parcel of this process. So in order for them to maintain a certain level of autonomy, they had to be taxed, but they were not, they were subjects of the state, but certainly not citizens of the state. And it changed slightly. In 1946, the unification and integration policy was introduced by President Tubman. And the purpose of this integration and unification policy wasn't as, it was really about President Tubman kind of expanding or projecting his control over the territory. And the only way to do that was to bring in those who had been disenfranchised in the past into the nation state. And so he introduced this unification and integration policy to expand citizenship so that only that those who were taxpaying as well as propertied had land would be able to be citizens, both men and women. And so you see the expansion of Liberian citizenship in the mid 20th century. In 1973, and I have to mention as an aside that most of these configurations or reconfigurations of citizenship were really about legal status. Later on, I'll talk about the fact that Liberian citizenship in the 21st century transcends legal status and legal identity. So in 1973, the Aliens and Nationality Law was passed, and it maintains, again, this Negro clause: only those of black ancestry or black descent can be citizens of Liberia. And it also revoked dual citizenship. In the 1847 Constitution of Liberia, dual citizenship is almost it's a de facto status. So there isn't any sort of explicit recognition of dual citizenship as being, you know, recognized officially, but it's de facto. In 1973, a provision in the law basically says that if you are a citizen of Liberia, born in Liberia, and you naturalize in another country, you effectively revoke your Liberian citizenship. So it put some sort of limitations on people, again, being able to be transnational citizens. And another provision within the 1973 law is that women, Liberian women who have citizenship, cannot pass on citizenship to their children. So that's an explicit provision within the law. So again, limiting it in some ways while expanding it in other ways. The 1986 Constitution changed those parameters a little bit. Again, it maintains the Negro clause, but it recognizes de facto dual citizenship. So in the law, it says, once you're a Liberian citizen, you're a Liberian citizen through and through, that no one can take that away from you. But there are contradictions between the Aliens and Nationality Law and the 1986 Constitution. And the dual citizenship bill that was introduced in 2008 attempts to reconcile those contradictions, right? So the dual citizenship bill says we shouldn't penalize people for leaving the country during the Civil War, particularly because the state effectively ceased to function and the state was not protecting them. So you can't penalize them for going to other countries and naturalizing through no fault of their own. And they should be able to maintain not only the citizenship of the country where they migrated and settled, but also the citizenship of Liberia. The proposed dual citizenship bill also proposes that women, Liberian citizen women, should be able to pass on citizenship to their children regardless of the nationality or the citizenship of the father of their children. And so you see that, again, an expansion of citizenship, but the dual citizenship bill maintains the Negro clause, and there's a whole controversy around that in Liberia today, where people argue that that particular provision should have been reconciled. Okay, so Liberian citizenship and its discontents. I'll talk a little bit about, again, this birthplace, bloodline, and beyond effect. Now, in terms of the constructions of citizenship, when I spoke to these 202 Liberians across the five urban centers, one of the first questions I asked them is, who do you consider to be a Liberian citizen? What are the parameters of Liberian citizenship? And they sort of, their responses I was able to categorize in these three different formats. So birthplace, they argued that if you are born in Liberia, you should automatically have jus soli citizenship, regardless of your race, regardless of your ethnicity. That should be an automatic entitlement. And a lot of people argued, particularly based on their social positioning, like there's a woman in the UK who talked about the fact that Mandingos, and she's of Mandingo ancestry, Mandingos are not considered citizens socially, right? And even politically to a certain extent, even though they were born in Liberia. And they have, and they are of quote-unquote Negro descent. So she says, anyone born in Liberia should be able to have Liberian citizenship, regardless of their ethnicity, regardless of their race. Another person argues for doing away with the Negro clause and saying that, you know, Lebanese have lived in Liberia for generations, and many of them have been born in the country. So to deny them of citizenship by birth is explicitly discriminatory by race. So we should be able to open up our citizenship laws to enable jus soli citizenship by birth across the board, regardless of your race, your ethnicity. Again, contestations, and I just pulled out two quotes, but there were a myriad of comments around whether or not Liberia should have jus soli citizenship across the board, whether it should be across the board or whether it should be qualified. Many people argue that it should be qualified, others argue that it shouldn't. So these are just a couple of quotes that I pulled that I thought were particularly poignant. Another sort of conception or foundation of citizenship is that it's effectively by birthplace. And this bloodline birthplace foundation is basically anchored in law. So people argue that Liberians should have jus sanguinis citizenship, again, regardless of race, ethnicity, and class. And that in some instances, they argue that jus sanguinis citizenship should be the law of the land. Others argue that no, if someone has Liberian citizenship and they do not effectively contribute to the state, then that should not be an automatic entitlement. So a woman based in London says, and her case was particularly interesting, she's a Liberian woman who's based, she was born in the UK, she left when she was two, grew up in Liberia throughout her formative years, and then moved back to the UK during the course of the armed conflict in Liberia. And she had a Liberian citizen mother, but a Jamaican father. And so by law, quote unquote, in quotation marks, she is not considered a Liberian citizen because her mother cannot pass on citizenship to her. And so she argues, I wouldn't consider them my, it's the next quote. She says, a true Liberian is someone who identifies with that country and who accepts that they've got roots there. Again, this sort of bloodline ancestry notion of citizenship being traced through not only the father's lineage, but also the mother's lineage. So she's making a case for why the provision around not enabling Liberian women to pass on citizenship is discriminatory by gender. She goes on to talk about that. But the first quote I thought was particularly interesting because it's a woman, again, based in the UK, Liberian citizen, who moved to the UK and naturalized in the UK. So by law, she's not considered a Liberian citizen. And she argues for not enabling her children who were born in the UK to have citizenship. And she says, I wouldn't consider them to be Liberian citizens. If they don't live in the country and they have never lived in the country, I don't think it should be their automatic right because their parents are Liberians. So again, you see this sort of contrast between these two women who ended up settling in the UK, having very divergent opinions about the jus sanguinis citizenship by birthplace. And this came up by bloodline. This came up quite often over and over again, the sort of divergent opinions about what the foundation of Liberian citizenship be. Should it be based on ancestry or should it not be based on ancestry? Now, the beyond effect is what I'm most interested in because, again, it transcends the legal identity, the legal status. And I think this is where it becomes really, really interesting in terms of people's notions or conceptions of what a Liberian citizen is in the 21st century. This notion of having heart, it came up this word, having heart by heart, came up over and over and over and over again throughout my interviews. And I found it really, really fascinating that people use this particular phrase. There's a quote by a young man in a homeland Liberian based in Monrovia, and I'll just read it really quickly because I thought his statement was really profound. And it echoed a lot of what it echoed much of what other Liberians were saying about citizenship being beyond the legal status, citizenship being beyond just the rights and the entitlements, and focusing more and more on the rights and the obligations and the responsibilities. So he says, when I talk about being a Liberian, it's by heart. It's that no matter the case, whether I have citizenship abroad or whether I have citizenship in Liberia, but if I have Liberia at heart and I know that, yes, indeed, I'm from Liberia, my root is from Liberia, all other development, all other improvement to make sure that Liberia improves, to make sure that Liberia be a part of those nations that are up there, those expertise, those knowledge that I have, I should come and invest it in Liberia. That means I have Liberia at heart. Again, this kept coming up over and over again. I would say maybe 50% of people reference this notion of having heart. Moving beyond the passive identity-based citizenship anchored in law and legal status to the contributions, the obligations, and the responsibilities of citizenship. Another person talks about contribution. So again, this phrase kept coming up, that citizenship isn't just about being, it's about doing. And this quote comes from a 34-year-old male in Accra, and he says, people must know that country is the only thing we have, he's talking about Liberia, and must be willing to contribute. That is how I define a typical Liberian, contributing in any way possible to the society. Do you have family there? Are you helping the family there? Do you have a home there? Can people really appreciate who you are? These are contributions. Another person says, a 43-year-old male based in Monrovia says, I think anyone who has a vested interest and commitment to seeing this country grow, whether it's economically, whether it's politically, whether it's culturally, whether it's socially, but demonstrates a high level of patriotism, you know, the love for a land, the love for a fellow compatriot. Anyone who is coming and saying, look, I don't care whether I'm offered a job in the government or public agency. I just want to invest. I want the opportunity to contribute. Again, this notion of contribution as being the active, practice-based form of citizenship, not just the being, but also the doing. Contribution again, another person talks about the fact that citizenship should be tied to residency, and citizenship should be tied to paying taxes. That is your contribution to the state, and that's your contribution to your fellow citizens. It's not just about, again, the being, it's about the doing. But another quote came up, the very last one, and I didn't go through the first one because I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but was from Augustin Gafuan, who is the former Minister of Finance as well as the former Minister of Foreign Affairs in Liberia. And again, that's where you talk about the sort of the interface or the contestations around what it means to be a citizen in the 21st century. And he argues on the contrary. He says, whether you contribute or not, if you are Liberian, you are Liberian. No one can take that citizenship from you. So again, there are contestations even around this idea of contribution. There are contestations even around this notion of having heart. And again, citizenship isn't static. It's based on what people's social locations are, their lived experiences are, and their responses to the 21st century manifestations of what the foundation of citizenship in Liberia. There's a particular quote that I thought was very interesting because this person actually brought the being and the doing together. And he says that citizenship, the foundation of Liberian citizenship, it's about time, talent, and treasure. And there's a biblical reference that he's talking about where, I forget what passage it is, but it says, wherever your treasure is where your heart lies. And he references this and he says, and I'm going to go through this because I think it's a really important quote. He says, well, I think being a Liberian comes from what I call the Liberian-ness of a person. And it's something like character. It's something that is on the inside of you. Again, that sort of ancestry, bloodline foundation of citizenship. What do you feel in your soul? What do you feel in your inner self? Do you feel Liberian? And I think when you come to grips with that, then the outward expression of your Liberianness is what makes you a Liberian citizen. Again, so the being has to become the doing. And he says, do you feel patriotic? Do you love your country? Do you honestly want to contribute towards its reform and its reconciliation and its development? Do you remain psychologically engaged with Liberia? If some other country were to attack Liberia tomorrow, would you be willing to contribute, to give your time, your talent, and your treasure to the defense of Liberia? And then he talks about what that means. So time, meaning your contributions in terms of your capabilities. Treasure, meaning your money. And then also talent, again, what you're able to contribute in terms of your own capacities. Then he says, it's not what color of passport you wear. All of them, they're blue, all of them are blue these days. I think that's what he says at the end of the quote. And so I really like this quote because it brought together, at least for me, in terms of my conceptual framework, what these different dimensions and layers of citizenship are, about the being, the jus soli, the jus sanguini, but also about the doing, the contributions, the having heart, the contributing of your time, your talent, and your treasure. So what I did was I compiled, again, it's a qualitative study. It wasn't intended to be a quantitative study. But I compiled the different variations of the responses I got from people into basically the top 10 responses in terms of conceptions of citizenship. And I found a few trends. I found that, so you talk about being born in Liberia, the jus soli, having a Liberian mother or father, the jus sanguini. And what's interesting about this is when I ask people about the provision that states a Liberian woman can't pass on citizenship to her child, people were staunchly opposed to that, but much more polarized on the Negro clause issue. So identifies as Liberian, feels Liberian, considers Liberia home, and then raised in Liberia. I found that the first five conceptions of Liberian citizenship were very much passive in nature, and they were based on sort of emphasizing the rights and entitlements of citizenship. It's about the being. So the first five are about the being. And I found that the last five were really about the doing, the obligations and the responsibilities therein. So it talks about having lived in Liberia, making a conscious choice to live in Liberia. So citizenship by residency was really important to some people. It also talks about this notion of having heart, right? What does that mean? Naturalizing Liberia as being a form of practice. So you're actively deciding to be a citizen of a country by naturalizing in Liberia. So they talked about those who naturalize as practice-based citizens. And then, you know, showing allegiance, a loyalty, or patriotism to Liberia, and then, you know, this whole idea of contribution. What do you contribute to the state? What do you contribute to fellow citizens? So this is what I came up with. I said Liberian citizenship is really a continuum. It's a triad. You can put those three points on like a triangle, and then it's multi-layered. So it's passive, it's identity-based, emphasizing rights and privileges. So the first two, birthplace and bloodline, jus sanguini, jus soli, jus sanguini. But beyond that, it's also practice. It's active, it's practice-based as well as active. And this form of citizenship really emphasizes the responsibilities and the obligations, so the contributions and the having heart, as an example. And then beyond that, it's interactive, right? So it's based on relationships. So what is your relationship effectively to the nation state, Liberia? And what is your relationship to fellow citizens, whether they reside in the nation state as domestic citizens or those who live outside of the nation state as transnational citizens? So that's sort of the conceptual framework that I came up with based on these responses from 202 Liberians across the five different locales, as it being very, very multi-layered, very complicated. And it's not one thing it's multiple things to multiple people at the same time, in the same way that Yuval Davis argued that citizenship is multi-layered and differentiated by class, race, ethnicity, so forth and so on. And it's the same way that O'Connell Davidson argued that citizenship, people practice the institution of citizenship differently, again, based on Norman Long's notion of the social locations or the lived experiences that people conceive of and practice citizenship based on those social qualifiers. Okay, I've talked a little bit about this, so I might run through this really quickly. Again, my argument throughout the thesis is that the contestations over dual citizenship are really a 21st century manifestation of contestations across space and time around what does it mean to be a citizen from the 1847 establishment of the nation state until our 21st century post-war moment. So I've already talked about the fact that the Dual Citizenship Bill was introduced in 2008 in an attempt to reconcile the contradictions between the 1973 Aliens and Nationality Law as well as the Constitution of Liberia of 1986. It does maintain the Negro Clause, And it proposes that we expand our aliens and nationality law to enable Liberian citizen women to pass on citizenship to their children. It also enables dual citizenship, not only for those birthplace Liberians, those born in Liberia who may have left and naturalized in other places, but also those Liberians of Liberian ancestry. Those who were not born in Liberia, but they have one Liberian citizen mother or one Liberian citizen father. Presently, the Aliens and Nationality Law states explicitly that those de facto dual citizens have to declare the age of majority. Some people argue the age of majority is 18, others argue that it's age 21. So at the moment, our Aliens and Nationality Law does sort of recognize de facto dual citizenship for these Liberians of ancestry, but it says that at the age of majority, you must declare whether or not you maintain your Liberian citizenship by ancestry, or you maintain the citizenship of the country where you were born, your jus soli birthplace citizenship. And that's caused a problem amongst those Liberians who were born abroad as a result of the armed conflict. A lot of Liberian women had children outside of Liberia. So the question begins to be asked about what happens to this large group of people who have dual citizens or Liberian citizenship by ancestry, but have to declare at the age of majority. Okay, now what I did was I compiled a list of, I compiled the responses that I got around dual citizenship, because not only did I ask people throughout my interviews, what does it mean to be a citizen, a Liberian citizen in the 21st century, but I also asked them about what they think about the proposed dual citizenship bill in principle as well as in application. And I found some interesting trends. So of course the transnational Liberians that I interviewed in London and Washington and Freetown and Accra were very much wedded to the idea of the proposal being a good idea. And they effectively stated that they would like to see a passage of a dual citizenship bill. Even though there were some people who had reservations, for the most part, that block of individuals agreed that dual citizenship should be enacted in Liberia. Now, when you come to the Monrovia-based respondents, I found some interesting contestations, right? So there were about 19 people out of 83 said that they support dual citizenship with reservations. And those reservations were basically steeped in the fact that they argued that the proposed dual citizenship bill does not explicitly talk about the rights and the privileges as well as the obligations and the responsibilities of would-be dual citizens. They wanted the law tightened up to explicitly state whether or not a dual citizen can be the president of Liberia, whether or not a dual citizen can own land, whether or not a dual citizen would be entitled to land ownership, but also obligated to pay taxes on that land. They were more interested in how do you effectively ensure that dual citizens contribute to the state beyond just calling themselves Liberian citizens and citizens of another country. Those who rejected dual citizenship outright were about 25 out of 83, which I thought was a substantive number of people. Now, I suspect that if I had done more interviews in Monrovia, perhaps I would have gotten much more data on whether or not there was an equal split between those who supported the bill and those who didn't. But those who rejected dual citizenship basically goes back to Norman Long's notion of, you know, we respond to development and policy prescriptions based on our social locations and our lived experiences. Many of them argued that dual citizenship would be a zero-sum game for them, that because they didn't experience the institution of citizenship similarly, they talked about their socioeconomic status as being really limited, that even as domestic citizens, they don't benefit from those rights and entitlements the way that perhaps transnational Liberians do. And if you open up the floodgates, and I kept hearing this over and over again, if you open up the floodgates and enable those abroad to become citizens of Liberia as well as citizens of the countries where they were, where they eventually settled, then you ultimately privilege an already privileged class of people. Now that's obviously an assumption, because not everybody who travels abroad is living in a life of luxury. Many people in Liberians that I interview are struggling, although many of them come from socioeconomic backgrounds that are quite well off. So that was the assumption on the ground, is that that you have to talk about what they call bread and butter issues, issues around access to land, issues around access to a living wage, issues around access to justice, that until you sort out those post-war, post-conflict socioeconomic issues that Liberia continues to struggle with, that opening up, again, the floodgates and enabling those abroad to become citizens, what you end up doing is disenfranchising further those domestic citizens who don't experience the institution of citizenship fully by virtue of their socioeconomic status, lived experiences, and social locations. So that's where I found the most contestation and the most pushback. So if you see from the numbers, the vast majority of people support dual citizenship in principle, but they're still concerned about those socioeconomic bread and butter issues that they see as not being completely resolved. So some concluding observations. Obviously, Liberian citizenship has been configured and reconfigured over space and time by a series of different factors, and I talk about that throughout the thesis as being conflict, migration, globalization, and post-war recovery. In terms of conflict, Malki argues that, you know, identities, practices, relations between people transform after conflict. And as we can see from the contestations over citizenship from 1847 until the present 21st century dual citizenship contestations, citizenship has been configured and reconfigured in Liberia as a result of those conflicts over long durée. Migration, Liberia is a migratory nation. It was founded on the principles of migration. What I found throughout my sort of analysis is that as Liberia changed from a country of immigration to a country of emigration, the citizenship norms changed. Like they expanded not only horizontally but also vertically, where people began to adopt more transnational approaches to citizenship as a result of these migratory patterns throughout the course of the country's history. In terms of globalization, Liberia has also adopted a number of international human rights norms against discriminatory practices as it relates to not only race, but also gender. And I think as a result of that, people are beginning to expand their notions of what citizenship should be in the 21st century. On the contrast, Liberia is also incorporated effectively, even in the post-war moment, into the global capitalist system. And it's limited the socioeconomic capabilities of people in the country as well as outside of the country. And that's why you see a lot of pushback from Liberians domestically, who argue that, again, dual citizenship would be a zero-sum game for them. In terms of post-war recovery, there's a recognition that Liberians abroad have contributed through their remittances, through their capacity-building ventures, and that they are effectively contributing to the post-war reconstruction recovery process of the country. But there have been so many cases of Liberians moving back to the country and effectively getting their hands stuck in the cookie jar, where they've allegedly stolen large amounts of money from the national coffers and haven't been indicted. They haven't been extradited. So they're getting away with theft as a result. And so people say, if you're going to have a dual citizenship bill, you have to tighten it in such a way that it protects those domestic citizens, and that it doesn't enable people to take advantage of the rights and privileges of dual citizenship, that there have to be safeguards for those in the country. Most importantly, the foundation of my analysis basically is that, again, Liberian citizenship across space and time transcends the legal status, transcends the legal identity, where people are talking not only about the jus soli and the jus sanguini and the birthplace and the bloodline, but they're also talking about the active practice-based citizenship, where the foundation is about the contributions that you make to the nation state and the contributions that you make to fellow citizens. And my argument throughout the thesis and sort of conclusion is that the dual citizenship legislation as we see it now needs to be strengthened. It has too many loopholes, and it really has to reconcile between the passive and the active. You have to explicitly include in the bill what not only the rights and entitlements of would-be dual citizens should be, but also the obligations and the responsibilities. And it goes back to that notion of contribution. Being a Liberian in the 21st century is more than just about the rights and the entitlements. It's also about the contributions, the obligations, and the responsibilities therein. So that's the end of my presentation. Thank you for your time.